We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Dawson.
Hey, Ryan!
Hey, Pepe. Long time no see. You drive me crazy with time zones because most people, they're in the same place all the time, and you're either in Thailand or Hong Kong.
I know.
Sometimes it's Brazil, Spain, UK, I know. It's France.
It's a fucking mess. And exactly.
It's my game. I'm trying to cover as many countries with you as possible. Ironically, I've never had you in the U.S. or Japan. It's always somewhere
it's
else.
True. But last time I was in the U.S. was over 2 years ago, in fact. But next year I'm going for the Hillary-Rater against Jab thing. I cannot miss that.
I don't think it's gonna be those two. Remember when we had all the hype for Giuliani and he didn't even win a primary?
What's gonna happen in your opinion?
Hillary's got enough money, but I don't think Jeb's gonna be in there. I don't.
So
think
who
gonna make it.
Who would that be then?
I don't know yet. I'm hoping Lincoln Chafee will put his two cents in, and I think a lot of Democrats are going to actually back Bernie Sanders, even though he's
Bernie Sanders,
pretty much
really?
The same as everyone else. But yeah, a lot of the dumbass liberals see him as very progressive, and he's making this minimum wage versus the 1% thing a big issue. But I mean,
but is he known nationally?
Yeah.
It's
a lot like Obama was back in the day. Like nobody knew who Barack Obama was when he was a senator until he gave a speech at Kerry's convention. And everyone's like, I like that
I
black
remember.
Guy. They
I
called him
that
black guy, right? They didn't even know his name.
It's true. When I watched that speech, I talked to my wife at the time and said, this guy's going to run.
Yep.
That's inevitable. Inevitable.
And that's all it'll take. And just too many people hate Hillary. And she's got... Benghazi and all that hanging around her neck, and she's just left too many a long body trail, you know. And
I agree with you, but Ryan, it's 2.5 billion.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can buy anything with that.
Well, I think she will be in the running, but I don't think Jeb will. I don't know.
That's
too soon to tell. There a lot of people come on the scene who no one knew Romney really either. You know, but he had a lot of money.
Yeah,
he was a
true.
Governor, but and nobody knew Sarah Palin, and she ended up being a vice presidential pick. So
tell me about.
You never know. I think over and over again, I hear people say, "Not another Bush and Clinton," and it's true. I don't think we'll get either one, but whatever we get will be the same. At least we can change the name. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I'm worried about what's going on in the Middle East right now. You've written up on Asia Times a piece called Wahhabis Going Nuclear, literally, or maybe. What's going on in Saudi Arabia right now? Are they really trying to get the bomb, and are they really using the excuse of Iran's mythical bomb as their pretext?
Ryan, the House of Saud now is advanced stage of acute paranoia, if that was humanly possible. You know, with King Salman, he turned the whole thing upside down, and now they are belligerent. Under King Abdullah, okay, whatever you thought about him, he was weak. He was, in fact, he was a semi-illiterate. In fact, but he was prudent always. Now, you know,
we finished talking about Bush.
Exactly. we always come back to the Bush dynasty. You know,
semi-illiterate.
Exactly. And obviously they were running Saudi Arabia, the Bush dynasty. We all know that for decades, in fact. And first of all, under Obama, Abdullah already did not trust Obama. And now with King Salman, the Sudairi clan, which practically... It's expunged the Abdullah branch of the family out of a political power. And, you know, the second in line now is King Salman's son, the so-called minister of defense, the guy who is in charge of the bombing of Yemen, in fact. And now they're going completely bonkers, in fact, because they feel that they cannot trust the U.S. anymore. They feel surrounded. They think that Iran is out after a possible deal in June to conquer the whole of the Middle East, starting with the smaller Emirates, which is completely stupid. When you see that Iran and Dubai, for instance, they have very strong trade commercial ties. And there's a lot of Iranian money parked in Dubai. And they trade normally with the Emirates, even though they are Wahhabis against Shiites, you know. But in terms of doing business, this is what the Iranian diaspora wants. And this is what a lot of people in Tehran, among the leadership, also want. Do a lot of business with the Emirates. And Saudi Arabia, they see themselves isolated in all this. And there's the internal succession was more or less solved with the promotion of the people very close to Salman. It was a sort of a silent coup d'etat. And now they still don't know how to deal with China and Russia. They would like to sell more oil to China, and at the same, because it's one of they're one of the top three suppliers to China. At the same time, they want Pakistan to give them troops to fight this crazy war against Yemen, and the Pakistanis wisely said no. And this brings us to the leak of this so-called information, or more disinformation, that they will go for the bomb as soon as the Iranian deal is clinched next month. The source of the deal is very, you know, it's a giveaway. It's a former Pentagon official who talked to the UK Sunday Times, which is a Murdoch newspaper, and Prince Al-Walid, which is obviously royal family as well, is one of the major shareholders of a news corporation. So this is a trial balloon. And in fact, this I could almost say for certain, although I don't have conclusive proof, that this was initiated by Prince Turki. Prince Turki obviously is the former head of intelligence. He's the guy who made Osama bin Laden in the 80s. I'm sure he kept talking to bin Laden afterwards all the time, although he will never confirm that. Obviously, he's a very wild character. And he's been saying that in every major forum that he goes. And he's invited to all sorts of conferences in the Middle East, in the U.S., across Asia, etc. In fact, I bumped into him in Singapore 2 years ago. But obviously, I couldn't ask him any questions because one of my Saudi Arabian friends from the Sudairi family, by the way, said, if you even approach him with this question, they're going to kill you. So forget about it. So Prince Turki has been saying essentially this, what the Iranians have, we'll also have, assuming that they were after a nuclear weapon, which is completely, absolutely untrue, as the 16 Intel US agencies already knew for years, in fact, and everybody who follows the Middle East already knows. But this is their way of pressuring the Americans, because they know that the House of Saud in Washington, there are a lot of people who, you know, real VIPs, masters of the universe in Washington, they don't trust the House of Saud anymore. They think it's a burden. They think we should, you know, get rid of them. But we can't, because they're still one of the West's top oil suppliers, and they're sitting on the largest, or still the largest oil reserves, if we don't count what Venezuela has, unexplored, of course. So,
Saudi Arabia is also a partner in the covert mercenaries ISIS in Syria. The DIA report just came out admitting that the U.S. willingly fostered ISIS.
Well, this is, it's not that, yes, they willingly fostered ISIS, but the DIA report is very careful not to implicate the U.S. directly. Obviously, if you read the report, you see that they let it fester. And they knew what was going to happen, and still they let the cancer fester. Because, you know, they were, with all this talk that we've been hearing since early 2011 of supporting so-called Syrian moderates, there were never any Syrian moderates fighting in Syria, for that matter. They were different branches of Al-Qaeda affiliates or Al-Qaeda copycats of extremely hardcore right-wing Sunni, Wahhabi, or Salafist brigades. including one that took part of Aleppo like 2 years ago or so. Then they had to surrender. These are the people who actually destroyed most of the Aleppo souk. All this story about the U.S. just sitting and watching ISIS, it's absolutely correct.
Well, a little bit more than sitting and watching, they kept giving arms to the so-called moderates, knowing damn well what was going to happen.
Knowing damn well who would get the weapons. You're absolutely right. Who would get the weapons, which in most cases was al-Nusra, the Syrian branch of al-Qaeda. And then when ISIS-Isil-Daesh was sort of excommunicated, and they moved to Iraq. They crossed the border. They moved to Iraq. They hooked up with the people who were already fighting inside Syria, which are Iraqi commanders of the former al-Qaeda in Iraq that became the caliphate.
Right.
And then they start thinking about an overall strategy in what I call Syrak, which is basically the desert on both sides of the border, eastern Syria, western Iraq in Anbar province, up to the former Triangle of Death, Ramadi, Fallujah, etc. And it's Ryan, it's fascinating. The other day I was watching some footage that I filmed in the late 90s, before 9/11, of that region. I was doing that region by car. Can you believe that shit? You could rent a car in Damascus, and you could travel all over eastern Syria by car. I went up to the border.
Was it a Toyota?
No, it was a Ford Escort. Can you believe this?
You know about the Toyota Wars, right?
Exactly, not the Toyota Wars. And at the time, Syria was, this was 1 or 2 years after the death of Hafez. It was the beginning of the Bashar era. You could go anywhere in Syria. There was no talk of Sunni armed insurrection anywhere. Of course, if you went to the borders, you see that most people living there are very, very poor Sunni peasants, extremely religious, extremely right-wingers. But they would complain, Damascus, they don't look for our interests, etc. But that was it, And you could have, you had freedom of, even for a foreigner, you had freedom of movement everywhere. And obviously, this was under Saddam still. This was 1999, sorry. Right. And the border, but you could see already what the no border was like. It was a shack, in fact, in the border. And all the tribals, cousins on both sides, they were crossing back and forth, just like Afghanistan, Pakistan, the same thing, same scenario. And nowadays, it was much easier, of course, for the caliphate to regiment all these poor peasants and these tribes on both sides of the border. So this is what they control. They don't control big cities. They control one relatively mid-sized city two in Syria, and obviously parts of Mosul. They lost Tikrit, and now Ramadi. This was a big, big thing because everybody could see, and obviously U.S. intel could see, that they're natural progression would lead them towards Ramadi. And that's exactly what happened. So the U.S. could have prevented the fall of Ramadi. They didn't. The U.S. could have prevented the fall of Palmyra. They didn't. As much as the U.S. could have prevented the fall of Mosul last year, and they didn't. So, if you look at the DIA report and you see the facts on the ground, that's it. They just want divide and rule. They want the caliphate to faster. This coalition of the willing with 22 nations is an absolute farce. They bomb non-targets all the time. And when they need to bomb to prevent an advance, they don't, which is what happened in both Palmyra and Ramadi.
Yeah, it's just a theater to use the F-35, and it's totally disingenuous.
Yeah. But coming back to your original question, it's very, very dangerous because assuming there will be a deal on June 30, the P5 plus one and Iran, and assuming most of the sanctions, at least the UN sanctions, would drop in the immediate weeks after that, This means Iran is back into the Western fold as well. And the House of Saud is absolutely paranoid about that. They have to come up with anything like an imminent Holocaust. They're going to invade us. There are troops across the border. You name it.
Babies on incubators.
Babies on incubators, Kuwaiti style, by, you know, everything filmed by Washington PR agencies. You name it. And they are desperate. They don't
Snipers
know.
Snipers at a funeral.
Exactly. So, you know, they started with this absolute fake war against Yemen, which is a joke. It's the largest importer of arms in the world, bombing one of the poorest Asian, Middle Eastern nations, Arab nations, Muslim nations in the world. For nothing. For nothing. You know, because what the Houthis want is participation in Yemen government. They don't. They have nothing to do with the House of Saud, and most Yemenis, in fact, they abhor the House of Saud. They see the House of Saud as conquerors.
President Hadi got elected with no one else on the ballot. So he had basically vote for me or no one kind of thing. And then Hillary Clinton went and applauded to say how democratic the election was in Yemen. What a joke.
But this speaks for itself, right?
One name on the ballot. Maybe that's how she wants it. Hope for
me. Well, it's just like Nazarbayev in Kazakhstan. Now, he got, what, 95% this in the election this year?
It was like a North Korean election.
Or a Kim Jong-un-esque election. You know, it's the same thing. No, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. But obviously, it's a very dangerous joke, the way it's progressing, because the possibility of the Saudi Arabia, obviously, no, just like in Hollywood, no one knows anything. But there are two possibilities. One, the Saudis already have a bomb or a suitcase bomb that they bought from Pakistan years ago already, and it's stashed somewhere in Riyadh. We don't know that. There's no
We don't know. We don't know that, but AQ Khan certainly sold nuclear technology to many others.
AQ Khan sold military secrets to, as far as I remember, Libya, Iran, North Korea, and Saudi Arabia. These are the ones that I really remember from the investigation at the time. But I was talking to some Pakistani analysts, and they told me, look, in fact, Saudi Arabia, they didn't drop a penny. The whole program, which cost, according to their own estimates, not more than $450 million, which is nothing, in fact, was financed by guess who? China.
China, yeah.
Not Saudi Arabia. So that invalidates our working hypothesis of the Saudis buying a Pakistani bomb or financing the Pakistani nuclear program. So if this was China, the Chinese will never allow the Pakistanis to sell a bomb to one of their major oil suppliers, which happens to be in conflict with one of their major gas suppliers, which is Iran. The Chinese don't want an antagonism between Saudi and Iran because they keep want to buy energy from both. They are among their top two energy suppliers, both oil and gas. And on top of it, Iran and Pakistan are working on the pipeline projects, the famous former IPI, Iran-Pakistan-India, that became Iran-Pakistan-IP. The Iranian part of the pipeline, the gas pipeline, is already completed. And guess who's going to finance the Pakistani side? China. So can you imagine China helping Pakistan give a bomb to Saudi Arabia when Pakistan and Iran are building an umbilical cord to, you know, for Iran to provide energy to Pakistan? It doesn't make sense at all. At all. At all. And I stand by the analysis of these Pakistanis because they know better who financed AQ Khan, even though AQ Khan cannot speak anymore. So this brings us back once again to the House of Saud paranoia. They will try to give the impression to the outside world that, number one, not only they are not happy with the P5+1 Iran agreement if it happens because they think that Iran is an expansionist power and it wants to conquer the whole the Middle East, but they will give the impression.
I mean, could that be insincere? Because wouldn't it threaten their energy trade in a sense? Because if the sanctions are lifted and their land is allowed to create electricity with nuclear power that would free up all the oil and gas they're currently consuming.
And that's exactly the Iranian strategy. The Tehran strategy is to use nuclear power for, you know, for their own needs and export as much as they can oil and gas. And now counting on European investment to upgrade their energy installations, which they already see this as a given. And the Europeans themselves in Brussels, which still doesn't have a an energy policy, by the way, they are desperate to go to Iran and, you know, unleash tons of cash in Iranian energy installations, and soon they're gonna have pipelines from Iran or start buying an Iranian natural gas en masse. So this is what Brussels' energy policy amounts to nowadays. It's the same old story. The only way for us to, you know, release ourselves from Gazprom is to buy gas from Iran. But we couldn't do it before because of the especially the American sanctions. If there is a deal, obviously the whole thing is going to change. And obviously
the American sanctions weren't. It wasn't that so much America. America doesn't really buy anything from Iran anyway. It was Obama going around and getting all the European allies to go along with it and the Asian allies to go along with it. Otherwise, those sanctions didn't really have any teeth. But it's been hurting Europe. It's against their own interests to obey America, and America's just obeying the Israeli lobby.
Absolutely. And Europeans now, they will feel that they are finally free themselves from American pressure. First of all, because the UN sanctions will be the first to drop. And even the American sanctions stay, the Europeans, they don't give up. They don't care anymore. They are absolutely desperate to, you know, relieve themselves from Gazprom selling, what, almost 30% of their natural gas. So if they invest in Iran, they wait for another 3-4 years, and they can have Iranian natural gas and also Turkmenistan natural gas flowing through Iran, it's perfect. So this
sounds
like
from Japan, too, because ever since Japan cut its nuclear energy off because of the tsunami, they would love to get a piece of Iran's gas and oil. They've been buying it, but less than before. Haven't fully less gone on the sanctions, but they'd love to buy it, and they'd buy it in yen, too.
Exactly. So can you imagine Iran selling not only to Europe, but also to Japan, North Korea, and obviously increasing what they already sell to China. In natural gas, I think they're the first or the second top supplier of natural gas to China. And obviously, there will be pipelines going in all directions, not only to the east, to Asia, but also, and that's also very, very juicy to follow in the next few months. You remember that famous Iran-Iraqi-Syria gas pipeline?
Of course.
Yeah, of course. We all do.
I think I was the guy that yelled about it the most. But yeah.
Can you imagine if...
And I'm sorry, but that's all for the free podcast for today. Premium membership, that's anybody with a recurring payment on PayPal for ANC members, can go listen to the whole interview. It's about 52 minutes. Right now, it's underneath this. All you have to do is sign in and click play. Also, as of today, all of the ANC podcasts are downloadable. That's all the ones I've ever done. And that is free, and that is for everybody. But if you'd like to become a member, all you have to do is sign up, which is free, and click that little PayPal button and send $5 a month. You can make a reoccurring payment, or you can just pay one time, and then you can go listen to all of the full podcasts. My next guest is going to be my brother, Scott Dawson, who has found The Lost Colony, followed by Brad Hoff, who wrote an excellent report about the DIA report, which is about how America fostered ISIS. You're not going to want to miss that one. Folks, please do sign up, because these ANC memberships are helping to pay for The Empire Unmasked, which is War by Deception Part 2. It is more than halfway finished now. I'm dealing with sound and adding some things in. You're going to want to listen to the rest of this Pepe interview. We got into Seymour Hersh's take on what happened really to Osama bin Laden, more on oil pipelines and ISIS, more on Saudi Arabia, Iraq. And I asked him about Netanyahu and Obama's divide. So do sign up and listen to the rest of that report. Peace.